This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump released the details of his proposed budget plan for fiscal year 2018 while on his multi-nation tour. The budget, which is called A New Foundation for American Greatness, has deep slashes to education, Medicaid, food stamp programs, and more, and a massive boost to the military. Practically speaking, the budget proposal is considered dead on arrival in Congress, even though both chambers are dominated by Republicans. Still, the austerity measures outlined in Trump's budget will likely influence the final budget that is voted on. My guest is Doug Henwood, a political economist, editor of Left Business Observer, author of After the New Economy and My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets the Presidency. He's a frequent guest on this program. Welcome back to the show, Doug.
Oh, thanks for having me, as always.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, we have known what to expect in this budget because the outlines of it were released earlier. Now it's fully out there. It is in a paper format. It's being distributed. And it seems to violate some of the very basic promises that Trump made during his campaign. We recall that Trump claimed he would not cut so-called entitlement programs. He would not cut the benefits that go to ordinary people. And it seems as though this budget is quite the opposite of that.
Well, it certainly is. I think when you said it's out there, it is out there. There's no question about it. There's a German sociologist of about 100 years ago, Rudolf Goldschmidt, I think his name was, who said that the budget is the state stripped bare of all misleading ideologies. And this is, I think, a very accurate picture of what Trumpism is all about and what, more broadly, the Republican Party is all about. The cuts to education, health spending, social spending, income support, all these things are deep and savage. The increase in the military budget is just stunning, over 600. The preposterously large military budget whose dimensions now escape me. But at the same time, he's just coming up with crazy budget math, that there are going to be deep tax cuts for rich people. So it's a document that takes from the poor and gives to the rich in totally naked and extreme terms. And a lot of the people who voted for him, who expected that he was not going to be this kind of fiscal sadist, not this traditional Republican in his budget making, well, they're going to get very badly betrayed because some of the deep cuts are to rural programs, various income support, economic development, legal assistance, all kinds of things that poor people in rural America depend very heavily on, people who voted in large numbers for him. And now he's going to turn around and take money and resources away from them. And also other things like, cutting the State Department budget deeply, cutting the EPA's budget deeply. It's a war on knowledge, a war on science, as well as a war on poor people. It's just a war on civilization in general, and it's just a horrific document.
I'm so glad you were able to sum it up in that way, because we don't hear those analyses, or we haven't yet in the media, and it really needs to be put into context. Now, are the cuts specifically to Medicaid in line with the House passed bill on repealing the Affordable Care Act? Because their vision for undermining Obama's healthcare reform included massive cuts to, or a rolling back of, Medicaid expansion, right?
Yeah, it did. I don't take any of the numbers in Trump's budget seriously because Congress is going to do what it wants to them. But the cuts to Medicaid, to public housing, to everything, an already minimal welfare state in this country, will be made even more minimal, and millions of people will suffer from this. He's also proposing cuts to one of the few good things that George W. Bush ever did, his African AIDS program, which saved really literally millions of lives. And according to estimates by people who know this stuff, the budget cuts that Trump proposes to PEPFAR, the president's emergency preparedness, President's Emergency Program for AIDS in Africa or something like that, the cuts to that will kill a million people or more. And so
Wow.
it's really, it's just remarkably savage. And, you know, George W. doesn't get enough credit for that. That's one of the few good things he ever did. And Obama expanded it somewhat after having cut back on it initially, but now Trump would savage it. So, you know, people will die from this budget.
The president's emergency plan for AIDS relief. So that's something
Yes,
that I
that's the
haven't
one.
actually seen articulated as being part of this budget as well. Now, the food stamp cuts are also huge. I mean, these specific cuts, over $190 billion in cuts over 10 years to SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is essentially what our post-Clinton welfare program is called. And basically, this most directly targets some of the poor white, the working class whites that Trump relied on for votes.
It would. There are many aspects of this budget that would target precisely that base. I think it's as it's weird to find myself quoting Matt Iglesias approvingly, but he did make a good point shortly after the election that it was wrong to talk about the Trump voter. There are at least three kinds of Trump voter. There were the kinds of poor people, rural white people, rural white poor and working class. There were the hardcore hating neo-Nazis, and also traditional Republicans, you know, rich people Republicans who just want tax cuts and don't want to give any money to poor people. So the only constituency that this addresses would be really in material terms are the rich white suburban people who voted for Trump in large numbers for very traditional Republican reasons. So for all this talk of him being a disruptive Republican, not like a regular Republican, he's acting pretty much like one when it comes to this budget. There are divisions within the party, so it's not this thing is not going to go through Congress unmodified. One complicating factor is that a lot of Congress people from rural states like food stamps because they help support agricultural income. So there's that, and so we might not see such savage cuts to food stamps. So there certainly are some who would like to, some who would just like, for ideological reasons, to cut the thing very, very deeply. But you listen to what his budget director, Michael Mulvaney, says. He's the guy. The guy is a complete ignoramus. He really has no idea what he's talking about. There's some crazy double counting going on. They're talking about, you know, $2 trillion in tax cuts, but the tax cuts are supposed to pay for themselves, so they're not really going to affect revenue. It's just all
How
this
do the
budgetary
tax
math.
cuts pay for themselves if they're only cutting and not increasing elsewhere?
Well, they don't really. I mean, it's the same nonsense that Reagan used to talk in the 1980s when his tax cuts were going to pay for themselves because they would generate such strong economic growth. The budget assumes economic growth in the US approaching 3% in a couple of years and staying there for the last 7 years of the 10-year budget period. That is so far out of line with what everyone else is expecting. And everyone else could be wrong. Who knows? But a 3% sustained rate of economic growth is not something we've seen in over 20 years. Given the slow rate of labor force growth in the country and the fact that trend productivity growth is now about zero, it's very difficult to figure out how we could get to 3% economic growth simply because we're going to cut taxes on rich people and throw poor people into the street. It makes no sense at all.
And Wall Street is booming right now. It's simply putting more money into the pockets of Wall Street executives and more money at the top. We know that when corporations get more money, they do, which is essentially what this would do, they tend to hold on to it. They don't tend to increase the number of jobs. And if they do, they're often insecure jobs that feed the so-called gig economy, right?
Well, what the corporate America has been doing for the last several years is not investing. They've been hiring somewhat, but at a rather slow rate. But what they have been doing is shoveling vast amounts of cash into their shareholders' pockets. Corporate America is rolling in it. Profits are off from their peaks of a couple of years ago, but corporate profits are still quite high. But they're not, you know, according to theory, that means they're supposed to invest those profits. That's the whole official rationale for there being profits at all is that they're supposed to finance investment in productive equipment and software and all those things that are what increase productivity, growth, and incomes over the long term. They're not doing that, though. They've been very tight-fisted with the capital spending, but very generous with giving lots and lots of money to their shareholders. So it's just, we've seen Wall Street over the last, I don't know, since forever, but especially in the last 30 years, and even more especially in the last 5 years, they've just been a machine for transferring income upwards. And this budget would do even more of that. It would add state power to that upward transfer.
And so I just want to mention, for so that we can get this out there, among the cuts that Trump proposes in his budget is cuts to job training, cuts to rental assistance that will eliminate housing vouchers, elimination, entire elimination of the low-income home energy assistance program, which basically helps poor households, particularly seniors, to pay high heating bills. 12% cut to the education department, including reduced grants to local school districts, reduced grants to work-study programs, 17% cut to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 53% to rural health programs at the Department of Health and Human Services. I mean, those are just one sort of, just the highlights, if you will, of some of these draconian cuts. Doug, is it fair to use the word austerity when we look at this budget? We've seen that word be used in the European context for a few years now, but is it very fair now to say that this is an austerity budget?
Well, yeah, it's a deeply austere budget, but also it's a deeply cruel one. The austerity is all being thrown upon, you know, the bottom third of the society. And these are people who've been doing very badly for decades now, and they're going to be doing even worse if anything like this budget passes. It's just absolutely appalling. And also the effects on the broader economy of these cuts to really essential things. But I don't see how they're going to get anything like the 3% growth they're talking about. I think, you know, we're going to get a very miserable economy for most people, and it's just going to just generalize a state of misery. So it's more than austerity. It's just, you know, it's real fiscal savagery. It's an appalling document.
How is the Republican Party going to view this? Because the Paul Ryan types will see even this budget is not going far enough, because it doesn't touch Medicare and Social Security. But then you've got other Republicans who are worried about the impacts to their rural communities, and they've got their eye on re-election. So will the fact that the Republican Party is divided undercut their control of both houses of Congress?
Well, it quite could. And, you know, there are a lot of people talking about wanting to impeach Trump at this point. And I really don't like that idea so much, because I think he's such an incompetent and divisive and ludicrous figure that it makes it much harder to adopt this kind of agenda. I think, you know, if Pence were president, it would be much simpler. He would probably be able to finesse some of the splits within the Republican Party better than Trump, who, for all his, you know, self-proclaimed skills as a deal maker, doesn't seem to be much of one at all. So the Republican Party's got some serious internal problems, and they could have some very serious electoral problems in 2018. This agenda is very, very unpopular. You know, Republicans have been talking this way, you know, for a long time, but in some ways they had the privilege of not actually having any power. And they could talk about repealing Obamacare. Now that they're on the verge of doing that, they're finding out that it's a very unpopular thing. They've been talking about these kinds of budgetary cuts for a long time. And, you know, they're going to find out that that's not a very popular thing either. And the fact that Trump has decided to keep Social Security and Medicare uncut, I don't think those things should be cut by any means. Social Security is not a very serious fiscal problem for the long term. And the Medicare spending is a reflection of our entirely screwed up healthcare financing system. It's not just about Medicare. It's about the whole ball of wax. But by keeping those things off limits to budget cutting, it means that the only portions of the budget that remain are these relatively small things. Domestic discretionary spending, in the jargon of budget people, that really, really matter to the lives of a lot of people, but are not that momentous in fiscal terms, given the size of the budget and the U.S. economy. But all of the cuts have to be focused on these relatively small programs with very, very dramatic economic effects and human effects.
Now, it's interesting that the whole budget is being cast as favoring taxpayers. I'm not sure how. I mean, this is again going back to what feels like this extreme polarization in the country, where we look at the same reality and see completely opposite things. I mean, you and I look at this budget and see this budget completely targeting taxpayers, taking, as you said, an upward, facilitating an upward mobility of our tax money. Whereas the Republicans say that this is favoring taxpayers. In what world is it favoring taxpayers? Do they use cuts to programs like PEPFAR, for example, to say the coal miner in West Virginia shouldn't have to use their taxes to pay for AIDS rehabilitation in Africa?
Well, I suppose you could say he's technically correct, because rich people pay more taxes than poor people.
I see. Okay. So favoring rich taxpayers.
The bulk of federal income taxes are paid by upper income taxpayers. There's no question about that. And this is kind of behind this is, Mitt Romney's vision of America, in which 47% of the population is takers. So the takers, they're not the ones who contribute much in the way of tax revenue. They contribute Social Security taxes for sure, but not much in the way of income taxes.
Because they don't have much income. Those with the income.
Right, that's the thing. Yeah. And, the federal tax system is still somewhat progressive. And so you put those things together, the fact that the upper brackets control so much of the income, and the fact that they pay a higher tax rate than people below them. And from their point of view, they are the taxpayers. That's what this whole thing is supposed to be about. A bit of redistribution from the well-off to the less well-off. But they're in rebellion against that very idea, and that this budget is all about that. I want to keep what's mine is mine, and as for what you, well, I don't really care. That's the attitude behind this.
Well, Doug, let's see how this budget plays out in Congress. I always appreciate having you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
My guest is Doug Henwood, political economist and editor of Left Business Observer, author of After the New Economy and My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets the Presidency. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.